Where is the best place to go when it hits the fan? Today I want to show you several different mapping tools that you can use to either identify a great place to bug out to or a place to actually lay anchor on a property. Now, recently in a video, I talked about the preparedness property resilience scale that I devised. That goes over the multitude of factors that you want to consider as a prepper before you buy a property. Things such as water, food, defensibility and security, population density, remoteness and proximity to resources, shelter and buildings, land size and topography, energy and power generation, medical access, climate resilience, communications, transport and access, community and trade potential, as well as several environmental modifiers, be they natural disaster prone regions, proximity to military bases, or even whether or not that place might be a nuclear target. Now today I want to share with you all the tools I use to assess a property from start to finish. A lot of these I'm sure that you haven't seen before. This is going to be very useful even if you're not in the market for a property, if only just looking for a safe place to bug out to when it all hits the fan. So let's get started. Now, when we're talking about preparing for an SHTF situation, you don't want to be in a densely populated region. So one of the first things you want to do, of course, is look at the population distribution of your country and find out places that, well, are not going to be so heavily populated. This is probably going to be common knowledge for a lot of people, so you might not even need a map in order to interpret this. But this is the population distribution of Canada as of July 1st, 2022. Will largely be unchanged since that time. I would recommend avoiding altogether Southern Ontario. Clearly, we do not want to be in this region. They call this the Golden Horseshoe. It's the Great Lakes Megalopolis. Within this relatively small geographical region, you have around 50 million people surrounding the Great Lakes on both sides of the border. This is a place where resources are going to be in great demand. If anything, you would want to go to the Northern Ontario regions, which is a completely different world compared to South Ontario. The same thing is true in some of the central parts, whether it be Edmonton or Calgary, Saskatoon, Regina. You know, Vancouver is a very densely populated region, but for the most part, it's not hard to find a low population density region in Canada. Now, as preppers, one of our central concerns is nuclear Armageddon. There's plenty of different maps that you can access that will show you the primary targets that might be engaged in a full-blown nuclear war. If they're using a counter-force strategy, then they're going to try to target land-based missile silos that are in North America. So a map like this is factoring in the counter-force. Counter-value means that you're attacking civilian centers, critical infrastructural nodes, things that are going to be military adjacent. There are other maps that will show you a counter-value outcome like this right here. So this is going to show you, you know, potentially what the radiation fallout pattern is going to be if they do a full-blown strike, and that's targeting every major city and critical infrastructural node based on the prevailing winds in any given region. Now, there's a more detailed map that a lot of people reference, and it's called Nuke Map. I've done a dedicated video on this years ago. It gives people a general understanding of how nuclear weapons work, what the scale would be, and what the potential fallout patterns could be. Let's say we want to detonate a nuclear weapon on Toronto. We can select a preset. Let's be reasonable. Okay, let's do 100 kilotons. Do crude nuclear terrorist weapon. It's going to be a surface burst because it's a terrorist nuke, and let's detonate that. Dead center in Toronto, we get about 130,000 fatalities, which is surprisingly small. That's not taking into account the radiation potential thereafter. So 100 kilotons is a tactical nuclear weapon. Let's step it up a little bit, shall we? Let's do a 1.2 megaton. That's going to do some damage. Basically, take out most of the main downtown Toronto. 500,000 casualties, 1 million casualties, 500,000 deaths. And we're going to do that as a surface burst so we get more radioactive fallout. So that radioactive fallout is going to be kind of an inverse square law. and it's going to diminish, you know, depending on how far you are. The radiation could reach all the way to Ottawa by the looks of things. So it's a nifty map. Is it that useful? Not really, because for starters, we don't know what the nuclear targets are going to be. We can estimate, and we don't know what the prevailing winds are going to be that day. We don't know if it's going to be air burst or surface burst. So there's a lot of things to keep in mind, but it's a nifty tool to give people a sense of how nuclear weapons work, okay? Now, the next thing you want to look at is the plant hardiness zone. This is going to largely determine what kind of food varieties you can grow in a place. I'm focusing strictly on Canada for today, but chances are there's going to be a map that's equivalent for the United States. The plant hardiness zone map is basically going to tell you what kind of food you can grow in any particular region on a scale of 0 to 9, 0 being the worst, 9 being the best. Basically, in 9, you can pretty much grow everything. Now, it's important to remember, though, that even if you're in a level 3 zone, per se, you could build out the infrastructure like greenhouses or passive solar greenhouses, or develop various microclimates which can artificially elevate that particular space several zones above the broader zone that it's in. So, for example, I live in zone 3B or 3A, depending on which map you look at. And so this means that I can grow most fruits and vegetables, but fruit trees are much more difficult. With my greenhouse, I can actually approximate something that's closer to a 5A to even 6A, especially in the greenhouse where we can potentially grow food year-round. I would recommend using the interactive version of this map because you're going to get a much higher resolution, and you're actually going to be able to dial in and zero in with a lot of precision, especially in the mountains, what zone you're in. And in the mountains, as you can see, it can vary 3 to 4 zones within the span of a few miles. So it's very important you know this, because you can see here in the mountains, there's places that are 0A or 0B right next to places that are 5A and 5B. So you really got to be careful if you're buying land and make sure that it's in a region that you know there's going to be arable land that you can actually grow food. Because if you don't have food and water, you're screwed. This next map is a photovoltaic potential and solar resource map. Obviously, a staple of an off-grid homestead is typically going to be some renewable energy source. Typically, that's going to be solar power. Now, as you can see, in the prairie provinces, you're going to have the best results for solar power in the lower parts of these provinces. So you can actually find more detailed photovoltaic maps if you want to go province by province. And if you want to go down to the kilometer scale, you can actually get that. This energyhub.org, which shows you the different breakdowns by province on a region-by-region basis. Now, this is important because with enough energy, you can grow anything anywhere. And if you live in a region where you can efficiently harvest solar energy, well, that can actually make up for whatever sort of climate shortcomings that region might have. So take, for example, here in the southern parts and the central parts of Saskatchewan, where it's incredibly cold 5 to 6 months out of the year. Well, you can actually make up for that by the ability to harvest more efficiently solar energy and direct it into your horticultural practices. Generally speaking, you're going to have less photovoltaic potential in these mountainous regions, but because the plant hardiness zone is slightly higher there, it kind of makes up for it. So these things kind of balance out. So what I'm trying to say is don't rule out living in a place just because the plant hardiness zone is low. With enough time and work, you can build out microclimates that will approximate a much higher zone. So the next map we're going to look at are wind maps and wind turbine maps. So let's check out the mean wind speed map at 50 meters above ground. From here, we can look at this legend and we can see that the wind speeds are much higher in the prairie provinces. Much like the enhanced photovoltaic potential, you get the most wind and the most sun in these prairie provinces. So that means that your ability to harvest energy, not just from the sun, but also from a windmill or wind turbine, that's going to be way better than it would be in some of these mountainous regions where the wind speed is much lower. Now, that comes with its share of complications. Obviously, if you're in a windy region, things don't really grow well when it's too windy, especially trees. You can have trees get knocked over, you're going to get violent hailstorms, you're going to get plow winds, you're going to get things that are going to make things a nightmare from an agricultural point of view. So while this wind has energy that can be harvested, it is going to be a force to be reckoned with when it comes to building out your potential homestead and all the hazards that might come from high wind speeds. So this is a very useful map, and this is something that you're going to want to factor in before you buy a property. This next map is going to detail what type of soil is in the region of the property or the space that you're looking at to bug out to. This is going to be very important because if the land isn't arable, that's important information. A lot of people will go onto a property and think that they're just going to start planting food right away. But if the soil is not conducive to that, then that's going to be very problematic. So as you can see, some of the best soils in North America are in the prairie provinces where we have several feet of topsoil in some places. That is not the case in the mountains where a lot of people want to retreat to, which is not to say that you can't build up those soils, but again, that's going to take a lot of work, a lot of time, and a lot of energy. So the thing I like about this map is it's actually pretty high resolution. Even in the mountain regions, you can get a pretty good sense of the type of soil within a few gradations, what you're going to be able to do with that land. Ideally, if we were to triangulate the perfect property, it would be some place that kind of had really nice soil in a higher plant hardiness zone, maybe a little bit more wind potential, a little bit more photovoltaic potential. So you're really looking to have a Venn diagram of overlap between all of the factors that we're going to talk about today. There's not one place in the world that has the best of everything. I'm looking for that unicorn. I haven't found it yet. Okay, now most people are probably familiar with Google Earth. Google Earth is an excellent tool because it allows you to get three-dimensional topography of the region. The amount of different layers that you can use on Google Earth, as you can see here, there's EV charging stations, land surface temperature, average household income if you want demographic data, elevational contours. It's virtually endless in terms of how specific you want to get. But I just want to talk about the, potential for it to be used for its 3D topography, because this, especially in the mountains, can give you a really good understanding of what you're getting yourself into. But I also want to show you this. Oftentimes, the topography changes over time. There's a function that's called Show Historical Imagery. So on Google Earth, you go to View and you go Show Historical Imagery. Okay. And so this is going to give you a different satellite image going all the way back, in some cases, all the way back to the 80s. And what I want to show you here is how the landscape has changed over time. Take a look at this place here. All of these little blotches, that's all clear cut land. So that's all forest that has been cut. This is the difference between 1984. Okay. And now hold this thought. Now let's go up to 2020 and look how much more of that land has been harvested. This is important information for you to know because you might be purchasing some land and you might think it's going to look like that forever. But like I just showed you, the topography is going to change a lot. So let's look at this part of the map. So this is 1984, okay, in this neck of the woods. Now let's look at this. This is going to blow your mind. Let's go to 2020. Look at that. And basically everything has been devoured. Now, this is going to be a useful tool if you, say, want to look at erosion, or if you want to look at whether or not the hydrologic cycle is changing in a given region, if you want to look at what drought has done to a specific property. There's a lot of really useful tools you can find on Google Earth. Now, this next map is a terrestrial ecoregion map. This is going to tell you what the biome and the biodiversity is of the region that you're looking at. So for example, if I'm looking at the southern part of Saskatchewan here, it's going to be able to delineate where one biome begins and where another ends. So here in the low-lying regions, we have cypress upland, we have some mixed grassland, and then as we move northward, we're going to be getting into more treed areas. So we have moist mixed grassland, Aspen Parkland, the Boreal Transition Zone, and then, of course, we have the Boreal Forest up above. If we go over to the West Coast here, we have the Lower Mainland, we have the Pacific Ranges. So it's going to give you a bit of a sense of, you know, what you can expect in terms of the biodiversity, and it's pretty specific. So it's going to vary within a span of 20 miles or so. Every 20 miles, it's going to be slightly different. So this is a useful tool, and this is called the Terrestrial Ecoregions of Canada map. I presume that there is a similar map for the United States. Very similar to the eco and terrestrial regions is the ecozone and broader ecoregion description. So these are the broader definitions of mixed wood plains, boreal plains, prairies. If you just want a general sense of where your property lies, maybe you're planning on moving across the country, you want to generally know what you can expect in terms of an ecozone. A broader map like this will give you just general information, not particularly useful, but it's good for reference anyways. Now, this next map is a climate normals interactive map. You really want to understand the climatology of the region that you're planning on laying anchor or bugging out to in SHTF. So this interactive map from the Government of Canada, finally they've done something right, can tell us things like precipitation, average temperature, heat, and frost. So let's go to precipitation, something that's very important for preppers. If you don't have a body of water on your property, if that place gets a lot of precipitation, there's rain catchment potential there. So we want to know that. So let's look at the accumulated precipitation, and let's go for the calendar year, and let's go for 1991 to 2020, and let's update our map. So on the West Coast, you can see just immense amounts of precipitation, over 1,500 millimeters a year. But if you go into some of the prairie provinces where it's a lot more arid, you're only talking about 150 to 200 millimeters a year. Generally speaking, BC is a much wetter province. The interiors of any continent tend to be drier, and the coastal regions tend to be far wetter. But this will give you a more high-resolution sense of exactly what you can expect, because you can see there's some parts in central British Columbia where it's actually quite dry. In and around the Kamloops region, it's actually considered desert. There's rattlesnakes, there's black widow spiders, and just 100 miles from there, you're already into one of the most temperate climates in North America. So it's very important that you know what kind of climate that you're getting into. Another thing there is temperature. So if we want to look at the average mean temperature of a given region, you know, what is our mean temperature in, let's say, December? Is winter going to be survivable in the place that I want to lay down anchor without a lot of energy inputs? Well, this map is going to tell you. Generally speaking, the lower you go in Canada, the better. So if you see in the West Coast, this is one of the few regions of the country where it's above zero year-round. Some places on the Great Lakes and in the southern tips of Ontario, as well as out east in some of the maritime provinces, can stay relatively warm. Where it really gets cold is in the prairie provinces. Even if you go in the southern prairies, you can see that there's pockets here where it's a lot warmer. So this is a great tool just so you can get a sense of, you know, what the temperature is going to be, because that can really mean the difference in terms of how much energy you have to use to stay warm. This next metric is actually quite useful as well, because this is going to show you when the first frost is to be expected. Basically, the deadline for harvesting your vegetables if they're not in a controlled greenhouse type environment. So as you can see here, for the better part of the prairies, and for most of Canada, in fact, the first frost is going to be sometime in September. Again, this is all info that's going to inform your horticultural practices, okay? All right, so this next map is a crime map. Typically, in any major city and in some rural regions, you'll be able to identify where the majority of the crimes are committed on one of these interactive maps, which is usually a public access tool that the local police force might use. We can do the heat, we can do by markers, and it's going to show us all the different crimes that were committed, and we can enter in a custom date range. So we're going to go September 2024, so we're going to go back a year. So this is going to show us where the majority of the crime has taken place and what types of crime have taken place. And you can bracket the search if you want to just look for homicides, if you want to look for violent crime, if you want to look for break and entries. As you can see, there's a lot of crime in most parts of the city. So, you know, interestingly, the university is one of the least prone to crime, and that's because they have their own small police service who actually patrol this region. In most places, you're going to see crime concentrated around the inner city, but this is a useful tool because it's going to shape and inform your perspective. Let's say you're living on the outlying regions here, then you might expect that crime would be potentially more of a problem if it's adjacent to one of these high crime regions. And this is fairly accurate because, of course, in the east side, there's less crime. In the west side, there's a lot of crime. But in downtown in general, as you can see here, it's very densely populated in terms of criminal incidents. Now, you're not always going to have this much detail when it comes to rural regions, but there are maps that will show you on a county-by-county, region-by-region basis what you can expect in terms of criminality. This next map is a drought monitor map. You can find these pretty much in any country that you're in. It's going to show you the regions that are currently struggling with drought. Maps like this actually show you what's called a historical drought animation. So you can see the trajectory. This will factor in to your ability to potentially get water to grow food. So if you're in a place that is becoming increasingly more drought stricken, that's not to say that it might not be a part of a broader cycle, but you don't know how long that cycle is going to last. It could be decades or it could be forever. Things are definitely getting drier in general. Now, in wintertime, you're not going to see much going on the drought map, but it's in the summer months. That's when you're actually going to see that movement. So here, as you can see, since 2022, things are pretty dry in a good part of the country. So this is what we're looking at right now for drought. It's actually a pretty bleak situation, despite the fact that we've gotten a lot of rain. Now, this is July 31st. We've gotten quite a bit of precipitation since that time, so I'm sure it's come down a little bit. But generally speaking, the interiors of most continents are moving towards more drought-stricken. So this is something to factor in. You want a place where water security is high, and this map can inform that decision. This next map is a Crownland map viewer. Now, this is going to vary from province to province. This one in particular is focused on Ontario. This is going to show you where the Crown land is. So on Crown land, you can go and squat. I believe you can even harvest certain natural resources, but there's limits on how much you can harvest. You can shoot guns on Crown land. You can do a lot of things on Crown land. So a lot of people like to go and camp on Crown land, even though the access isn't as good. But this map will give you a very specific breakdown of the region that you're looking at and whether or not you're able to actually go on and use that land for hunting purposes. There's a lot of good hunting land out here. This is particularly useful for somebody who wants to know where they can hunt. Having a good Crown land access map is very important, and there's lots of cool interactive tools that you can use. Now, if you're buying a property, ideally you want to be in a situation where you're butting up against Crown land, because that's land that you can use, but you don't have to effectively manage. And chances are, because there's such large, endless swaths of Crown land throughout Canada, you are probably going to have that land mostly to yourself, unless it's near a more crowded region where people tend to hunt on there. Knowing where the conservation areas are, knowing where the protected wildlife areas are, that's going to be very useful information to know if you're buying property. This next map is just kind of a placeholder for a general concept. If you're planning on bugging out to a region or you're planning on laying anchor somewhere, you'll want to know what type of big game and hunting potential is on that property. So you're going to want to look at things like what sort of moose, elk, deer. You might want to look at waterfowl, bear. There's a variety of different maps, so I'm not going to show anything specifically. But, you know, if you want to know what the general region of that elk can be found in North America, there's an elk map, there's a moose map, there's a deer map. This next map is mapping 100 years of forest fires in Canada. Forest fires are going to be a force to contend with. Now, this is firesmoke.ca. So this is a real-time map that shows you where the fires are burning, what the smoke trajectory is going to be. It's useful in the here and now, but it doesn't really help you in determining whether or not the region that you are planning on moving to or bugging out to is forest fire prone. There are maps like this which show you which places are most prone to being burned and when they were last burned. So if it's more recent, then you can expect that you're probably not going to see a lot of wildfire activity. There's going to be some natural breaks. And you can find maps like this that are down to a far more tighter resolution. So you can actually see if the region you're in has natural fire breaks built around it. Has there been prescribed burns? These are things that you're going to want to know, because no matter where you are, if it's a forested region in North America, even if it's historically a very wet and temperate region, that place can go up like a tinderbox if the drought conditions are correct. Now we want to look at something else that most people don't think about, and this is really only for full-blown Mad Max SHTF. But let's say you might want to know where the minerals and mining operations are in any given region, because there could be potential there. Like, let's say we wanted to know if there was a coal mine nearby. Coal is a very primitive way to heat your home. It's a primitive way to generate electricity. This Canadian Minerals and Mining map is going to show you where everything is, whether it's the potash or the coal or the oil or the salt. So for example, here at Calling Lake, this is going to be a salt mine, especially in the interior regions where you don't have access to the ocean. People are going to want salt. So that's a potential post-collapse operation. Here we have a coal plant just outside of Edmonton. It's hyper-specific. Let's just say you wanted to make gunpowder after SHTF and you needed to know where you could get potassium nitrate or saltpeter or potash, this map might be useful in that respect, okay? This is not going to be a game changer for people when it comes to whether or not you want to go and buy a property, obviously, but this is just extra information about the surrounding region that could be potentially useful in a full-blown SHTF situation. So this next thing is a wind turbine database. So this is going to show you the proximity to any windmill farms in your region. This is useful information, number one, because if you wanted to set up your own windmill, this would tell you whether or not it was feasible, because they would never put wind turbines where it wasn't efficient to do so. If you're near one of these regions, you'll know that wind power is going to be very lucrative in terms of energy generation. There's actually not too many of these. You can see a lot of them are located in Alberta and in the southern parts of Saskatchewan. If you've never seen these wind farms up close in person, this is also a cool way if you're planning a road trip and you want to pass by them. These are monolithic structures that are certainly a sight to see. So you can click on the different wind turbines and it'll show you the megawatt capacity. It's going to show you the turbine number, the rated capacity, and all of that information. So this is good just from a Mad Max point of view if you want to know where these regions are, because if the shit really does hit the fan, these renewable energy sources will be feasible, at least, you know, for the foreseeable future, until they need maintenance, which requires more sophisticated infrastructure. Now, next up are water well registry maps. Most people don't realize it, but when you get a water well, you go into a registry and you can basically go and see all the information on that well. Now, the actual interactive maps for this are going to be on a province by province basis. There's very likely an equivalent in the United States. But as you can see here, this is the one for British Columbia. So I can zoom in on any part of this and it will show me exactly where the well was dug and all the details that pertain to that well. This is incredibly useful. If you're in a place where it is a more arid climate, like some parts of the United States, and you want to know where the wells are located, well, unfortunately for the homeowners, that's public knowledge. This one doesn't do it, but the one in my province, it'll actually show you all the details of that well. It's going to show you the depth, flow rate. So a water well registry is useful information, and if you're buying a property, it will actually tell you information about the well on the property. If you are on a well, you're going to want to know, is there a lot of agricultural land in that region? Because all of those chemicals and pesticides and things like that are going to be feeding potentially into that groundwater system. Now, usually through natural filtration methods, that is going to be resolved, but it's also going to tell you how many people are also drawing from the well, which could potentially factor into the feasibility of your well down the road. Although it might not be as big of a deal for preppers, you're probably going to want to know if you can get an internet connection. This is a cell towers map. There are thousands of cell towers. In fact, it's quite dizzying to see how many cell towers there actually is. When you actually zoom in here, these cell towers are very limited in terms of range and how many people can actually use them at any given time. I think it's a couple thousand per cell tower, which is why you see so many concentrated in a city. So you may be getting a property right here, and you might think that there's several cell towers around, so you could probably jack into most of those. But there's going to be places where you're maybe a little off the beaten path, like up here in the forest, and you might just be barely getting a cell signal in there. So this is a very important map in order to make sure that you have a communication. For some people, that's important. Let's go back to August 2007. We can see that there weren't nearly as many cell phone towers in this region. And then if we fast forward to 2025, we can see that there's a lot more cell towers. So even though there's not a cell tower now, at the rate of development, chances are there's going to be a cell tower there soon. Now, most provinces are going to have a land titles registry, so you can actually see who owns the land that's adjacent to your property. In addition to that, there's going to be all other kinds of information. If you want to know if there are First Nations lands surrounding that region that might restrict, access in certain ways, that information is out there, but it varies on a province by province basis. So I'm not going to be putting all the information in. If you want to know where the crown land is, the conservation areas, the waste management areas, various national, regional, provincial parks, all of that information is going to be available on interactive mapping systems that varies on a province by province or state by state basis. Another useful tool that you can likely glean from Google Earth, but it's forestry service roads. There are just thousands and thousands of miles of forestry service road that will give you access to crown land. You can go on a website like this, BC Mountaineering Club, and it'll show you all the various access points and different types of attractions and hikes and campsites that you can access through these forestry service roads. And these are also potential places to bug out to in an SHTF situation. And I would strongly encourage people to get a backcountry roadmap, one that gives you a lot of the topographical features and one that actually shows you where the forestry roads are in a hard copy version. And last but not least, if we're talking about a full-blown Mad Max situation, you're going to want to know where the nearest military bases are in your region. If you're in close proximity to a major military base, chances are you could potentially be a target or more likely to be a subject of expropriation. So just keep that in mind. You don't want to be too close to a military base, or maybe you do because maybe you see that there might be value to that in certain SHTF situations. But it's just another thing to potentially factor in. So if I was to make my own personalized map of my surrounding region, I would be looking for places I could scavenge. I could be looking for places of potential high risk, places where there's lots of natural resources, and all of the other factors that I've talked about today. Let me know if there's any other mapping systems or tools that you think might be useful or conducive towards the end of finding an ideal bug out retreat or that picturesque preparedness, homesteading, self-reliant property before it all hits the fan. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe if you enjoy this video. And again, go and watch the original video that we did on the prepping property resilience scale, where I break the system down in detail, which leverages AI in order to rate various properties. And stay tuned because we have a lot more property assessments coming in the future. Take care, guys. Canadian Prepper out.
The best way to support this channel is to support yourself by gearing up at CanadianPreparedness.com, where you'll find high-quality survival gear at the best prices, no junk, and no gimmicks. Use discount code PREPPINGGEAR for 10% off. Don't forget, the strong survive, but the prepared thrive. Stay safe.